Okay, we are recording. My name is Caitlin Blancett. I am 25 years old, and today, on Thursday, August 8th, 2019, I am speaking with Ed De La Paz, who is my friend, and we are recording in Richmond, Indiana. Let us begin. So we will start with a question, just kind of see where it goes from there. Do you want to say hi, Ed?
Hi, Ed.
You're the worst. Okay, can you tell me about where you grew up? What was it like?
Well, I grew up in Newcastle, Indiana, but I've lived in Richmond since around eighth grade.
Okay.
And for most of my high school years, I did move around a lot, but I did end up moving back to Richmond in my mid-20s when I started to attend Indiana University East.
Okay. So what was that like moving around so much as a kid?
Oh, it was horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Are there any, like, lasting effects that, like, have resulted in certain, like, behavior or personality things that you do now that you're like, oh, that's from, like, my very transient childhood?
Kind of. So the thing is that my parents divorced when I was 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually went to live with my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom moved to a different city. And then my dad moved to a different city. So all through elementary and middle school, I had connections in those communities just because I would go visit my different parents on the weekends. So I knew people in all the different high schools and areas I moved to was mostly because of custody issues and battles. So it was like, you know, I was moving from a community that I knew to another community that I knew. So it was just the, you know, especially in a time before, like, you know, social media took off and everything. Like, it was really hard to, like, stay connected because, you know,
yeah,
when you had friends in elementary, you had to move away, but then you had to move back. It's kind of just trying to rebuild those,
yeah,
connections, because it used to be like if you moved away,
like you were gone.
Yeah, you're gone. Like that person was no longer part of your life ever again.
Yeah.
So I kind of wish social media would have picked up a few years earlier. I think I would have been able to keep a lot more connections than what I had now and everything.
Do you think, did that, like, force you? I mean, obviously it would force you to, like, make new connections. And, like, it seems like you make new connections pretty easily now as an adult. Do,
yeah,
you think there's any connection there?
It did help with that. I mean, I'm still a huge introvert.
Mm.
So I really rely on my introverted friends to really start making those connections.
Mm.
But once I'm able to establish them, then friendships usually bloom that way.
Yeah.
And everything.
I remember, like, it's kind of hard, even with social media, like, it's easy to keep in contact with, like, your good friends,
mm-hmm,
but, like, with acquaintances that you're like, we could be good friends, but, like, you know, like, those are the people that, like, it's weird to keep in contact with.
Yeah.
You know, and when you move, like, every 2 or 3 years, then, like, you only have acquaintances,
mm-hmm,
right?
Oh, definitely. Like there's people that I get constant updates from, and they live, like, in Muncie,
mm-hmm,
and I know that, like, they're close enough that I could, like, hang out with them and be friends.
Yeah.
But it's, like, that would be, that take effort and time.
Yeah.
And so that's usually something that kind of prevents me from, like, going and trying to reconnect with all those connections that I've built with all the different communities in my life.
Yeah. Like, I deal with that. Like, I have a lot of friends that I've, like, made in Indianapolis,
mm-hmm,
but they're not, like, friends. They're, like, you know, so
yeah,
so it's almost weird for me to be like, hey, I'm going to drive an hour to come hang out with you.
Right.
You,
yeah,
know?
Definitely.
Friendship's weird. And especially, like, again, when you have to move, like, every 2 to 3 years when you're growing up, like, that is rough.
Well, in high school, so I went to Richmond my freshman and sophomore year.
Mm.
I went back to Newcastle my junior year, and then I went to go live with my dad, who lived out in the country near Modoc, Indiana. So, yeah, so, but like I said, though, it wasn't like I was going to a community where I knew absolutely no one. I,
yeah,
like, I had connections, so I was able to really kind of rely on that. But
well,
it was a culture shock, though, every single time.
Yeah, that's rough. I mean, you changed high school, like, 3 times.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
In 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to make sure that we hit all of your questions. Did you have any more on the first question?
We're good.
Okay. So tell me about your sister. How would you describe them? I just mentioned this because I love Tony and I wanted to hear you talk about Tony.
Well, so my parents divorced when I was 8 years old, and my father ended up remarrying.
Okay.
So I actually have two sisters from my mom and dad, Christina and Tony.
Okay.
On my dad's side, when he remarried, he remarried a woman that had four kids.
Oh, wow. So you have a lot of siblings.
Yeah, yeah. And then my mom fostered a girl when we were in high school. So I also have like a, we just pretty much just call her sister and everything like that. So yeah, so I have three stepbrothers and then one stepsister and then two real sisters and then one like foster sister.
Wow.
Yeah, so most of them, they live all about our area, but the closest one is Tony, who is my youngest sister.
Mm-hmm. Is she the youngest out of like all of your siblings?
No, there's two okay. younger. So she's the third to the youngest.
Okay.
So my two stepbrothers were actually the same age as me. I'm like 3 months older than them,
mm-hmm.
which meant that I got my driver's license first.
Okay.
And so that was really, really one of those, I'm the oldest and I kind of like lorded that.
Are you the oldest over everyone then?
Yeah, all okay. my siblings, I'm the oldest.
Okay, well that's pretty nice.
And everything. But yeah, so Tony, she's great. She also had a lot of issues with the divorce, with like most kids do, but she was the baby of the family.
Yeah.
So she was the one that like, I don't want to say she got her way, but she also did. But at the same time though, she would use that against the other parents. So she kind of like end up becoming more of the rebel in the family into middle school and high school and stuff like that. Wow. So she's calmed down since she's had kids of her own and everything like that. But yeah, she was kind of the wild kid.
Yeah, that's surprising. You weren't the wild kid.
Well, I mean.
Anything else you want to expand?
Like growing up, it was just weird because like I was the oldest, so I was kind of the one that tried to keep everyone in check.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm kind of like, yeah, that's fun. Let's do that.
Yeah.
So I never really was like I was kind of in between. Like I wasn't really like the rule breaker. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, though, I wasn't like the Captain America or something like that. You know, it's kind of like more around the Thor line. You know. Yeah, I'm just going to flow.
Not even 10 minutes in, and we're already on Marvel on superheroes.
Oh, there's a lot more coming.
Okay, good. All right. Well, let's keep going. How many questions did you like?
I did one for every question that you asked.
Okay, so you want to get to every single one.
Well, yeah, if we can.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Let's do it. Okay, so the next question I had for you was, can you tell me about one of your happiest childhood memories?
Well, yeah. So once again, being the oldest, I was the first to get my driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the first to have a car, and I was really happy because when you have seven other siblings, being the one that can actually drive and leave the house.
Oh, I bet that's
very
nice.
Very yeah.
What did that mean to you? Like what would you go
freedom with? It was definitely freedom. And well, the same thing too, when I was the first one to turn 21.
Mm-hmm.
So my two stepbrothers, which are the same age, but like I said, they're like 6 months younger, so they would always like, I would be able, like we had older friends.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd always want to go to the bars. I would be able to go.
Yeah.
They would try to sneak in, but they would always be turned away.
Yeah.
So that was, like, I know it's kind of, like, meanish, but those are some of my happy childhood moments.
Was all the things your siblings couldn't do that
I was able to do first, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think, like, you know, that's important to, like, be able to, I don't know, have those moments for yourself.
Oh, definitely,
you know, where you're like, this is mine and it's none of yours. Because I was born first.
Yeah. I mean, like, and I can see how, like, the younger, especially as we've gotten older, the older siblings have kind of, like, been able to develop themselves and, like, because they were able to find their way. But I think that some of the younger ones took a little more time to mature because they were, like, living in the shadow because there were so many of us kids.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can be easy to get kind of lost in the mix there.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. That's why you need a car to just drive. Cool.
So, yeah. And then, like, one of my worst memories, though, was when I broke both my arms.
At the same time?
Yes.
What did you do?
So, actually, the year before, I broke one arm jumping over fences.
Why? Like, just for fun?
That's what we did.
You jumped over fences. Was this when you lived in Modoc?
Well, it was in Newcastle, but so it happened like a week before I was supposed to go to on my sixth grade trip to Washington, D.C.
Did you not get to go?
I didn't get to go because I had a broken arm because I was in the hospital.
Son of a gun.
I know. So I missed that trip. And then the next year, we had rope bridges between two trees. And so it was a rope at the top and a rope at the bottom. We held on, and then we skimmed across with our feet. So I thought I was going to be cool and kind of balance.
Oh my God.
With just my feet, right?
How did that go?
Well, I fell and broke both my arms. Yeah. So that was a horrible experience of having two broken arms. But it was I was still young enough that I didn't have to have any metal or anything. Like,
really?
Yeah.
How old were you?
So that would have been seventh grade.
That's crazy. They didn't have to put anything in to like set it.
Right.
I don't know. That's crazy. So what was worse for you? The physical pain of like when it happened, or like the emotional pain of everything you couldn't do while you were healing?
The thing that bothered me the most was like the loss of control, because like people kept on trying to do stuff for me. Yeah. And that really bothered me because I'm like, being the oldest, I'm also the most independent.
Mm-hmm.
So like people always wanting to go, oh, I want to take care of you. I want to do this. I want to do that for you. I was like, I still have one arm. I'm fine.
I'll carry on. No, I need your help.
Yeah. And everything. So it was definitely one of the my worst childhood memories.
Yeah. That would suck, especially like because you were saying that like as the oldest child, like you were kind of more independent. So like having to give that up would be.
I don't recommend breaking arms.
If
you've ever inquired about doing that.
Okay, I've thought about it a lot. I thought about just like slamming them down. No, I don't. Okay, wow, that is a horrible childhood memory. Good job on that one. What did you think your life would be like when you were older? And has it turned out differently than you imagined?
So, once again, seven kids.
Yeah.
Which means that we had money, but we didn't have a lot of money because there were so many of us. So you know, like...
Well, a lot of your stand-up is about, like...
Being poor.
Being poor, yeah.
And, like, we weren't, like, poor, but we also didn't have, like, a lot of money. Because,
yeah.
So, like, when we go to Walmart, like, we would get $3 to spend. You know,
yeah.
But if you think about that, $3
and seven kids.
That's
$21.
And then you think about that too. It's like a trip to Walmart and then go to McDonald's and food. You start to realize that when there's that many kids involved, how costly it actually gets.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so why I do joke about being poor, it's more because there's just so many of us kids. But like, so because of that, like my goal in life, like from the time I was in high school, was I wanted to be a millionaire. By the time I was 30.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was a real
goal. That was my one life goal at the time.
Wow. Did
I make it? I'm still working on it. Let's put on that. But I was able to, like, in my 20s, I was able to hit a lot of milestones I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I knew I wanted to start my own business.
Mm-hmm.
So I did run my own business in my early 20s, which did end up crashing and burning.
But, as it should.
Right. But that also led me to go back to college to get my degree. Because I dropped out of college to start that. Because when I was 19, I knew everything in the world.
Oh, me
and,
too.
Yeah. So I was like, and you know what? I don't need school. I don't need to know how to do this stuff. I can just do it on my own.
What happened to all that knowledge?
But during that time though, my early 20s, I bought my own house.
Mm-hmm.
I own a nice car. I also was working. Finally, went back and worked on my degree. So while by the time I hit 30, like I did not like achieve the monetary value of what I wanted, I still hit a lot of the marks of where I thought I could have been and everything. So it was close, but it was not where I wanted to be.
I feel like when we're children, though, when we're growing up, there's such a different sense of like what. Like what wealth is,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like you do think about like, oh, I want to have $1 million.
Right.
But like, I mean, so much more. I mean, life is so obviously about so much more than that. And like, there's just this like richness and all of these experiences that you have along the way that make it's so cheesy, but like makes me feel like a millionaire, mm-hmm. you know, just with like, I think of the wealth of like, all the experiences I've had.
Well, and also, you know? Going through the experiences that I went through, I've also come to realize that hitting those monetary values comes with a cost, too, a personal cost. Because, like, I could go out there and, yeah, I could lay in a $200,000 job today, right? Yeah. But that means I'm working a lot more, a lot harder, and I'm doing stuff and work that I don't want to do, you know? Like, do I really want to go work for a bank? You know, like.
No offense to banks.
No. Love banks. Banks are important, but like being an artist and creative, like going into that would be like one of like it would just drain my soul.
Yeah.
Because I'm not doing work, I'm not having an impact on the community or any of the stuff that really affects me. So I kind of step back and realize that I eventually want to reach that $1 million, but I want to do it right in a way that I feel comfortable and I'm not like. Selling my soul for money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. Okay. So our next question is, are there any positive moments or memories from your life that you think shaped you into who you are today?
Definitely. So I have to say that my very first one was when I discovered comic books.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So it was at a record sale.
You're, like, giddy right now. I know this is an audio interview, but, like, your face just lit up when we got to this question. You're like, comic books, finally.
Yes. So comic books has had a huge impact, and an impact for the good. Because, like, my family are, like, I don't want to say they're delinquents, but they're from a more rural and more just kind of just go with the flow type of thing. So they're not really good decision makers, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of my family has spent time in prison. So going down that route and everything. So when I discovered comic books, that became like a lightning rod that I don't have to follow the path of my family, that I have other role models to look up to.
Yeah.
And what really, like, what was the thing that pulled me into comic books was I was at a garage sale and I saw an Avenger comic, and Thor was on the cover fighting a giant robotic dinosaur. And that I bought that comic for like 20 cents. It was horrible shape. I mean, it wasn't worth anything. And like from then on, I just collected them. And like, because I was a boy, like I never read the comics because boys don't read.
Do they not?
Boys do not read.
Back then they
Back then they didn't. Yeah. No, because it was all about playing baseball, basketball, and stuff like that. So I actually collected comic books from, like, that was around 6th or 7th grade.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little earlier. But so I collected comic books all the way up to my college years, right? Before I actually read a single comic. It wasn't until I was in college.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, would you just, like, flip through, like, for the images?
Yeah, it was all about the art. For me, it was all about the art. Jim Lee was, like, my hero. He drew the X-Men comics back in the 90s, which the cartoon was based off of.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to make that connection from comic books to seeing them on the screen really, like, fed my love of cartoons, which I still watch 90% cartoons to this day because of that connection between the X-Men cartoon series.
Mm-hmm.
So that really affected me a lot because it gave me another role model to look at, and it really affected my love for the genre and for art and everything. Now talking about actually reading in my college years, so the first book I actually ever read, because, you know, during the high school, middle school era when you were supposed to read,
mm-hmm.
I never read a single book
at all. Oh,
really? Yeah, I would look at them.
Animal Farm and Slaughterhouse-Five, all that stuff?
No. So what I'd do is I'd look at them and then I'd go find the digests or summaries. So I never read a single book until I was in college.
Wow.
And I was at a used...
Wow.
I know.
Insane.
I was at a used bookstore in Columbus, Ohio at the time, and I randomly found this book. It was called The Book of Five Rings by Miyamoto, and it had a samurai in the cover. So I was just flipping through and, like, just looking at it, and then, like, I was just reading different lines, and all of a sudden, like something, like, came over me. I'm like, wait a second. What's going on here? So I bought the book, went home, and read it from cover to cover.
Yeah.
And, like, because of that, like, it had a huge impact in my life. I mean, it really taught me that, like, I had control over my life and that I didn't have to, like, follow what others told me to do. Because what he presented was a different way of thinking. Because he had more of the Asian, the Far East type of philosophy. And that really opened my eyes to not having to follow Then go to 9 to 5, get your degree, get married, and have the happy ever after American life that I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
So that really affected me. The third thing that has really like shaped my life was my senior year in college. I had one free elective and I didn't know what I was going to do. So I randomly took an introduction to photography class.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why this has shaped my life is because from that one class, it inspired me to find like this passion, this love for photography, which has led me to start my own photography blog. My photography blog, citylife.fyi. Follow me on Facebook. I found a passion for photography. A lot of my art, I won't say artwork, but a lot of my photos have appeared in magazines across the region, billboards, and everywhere else. So it's really
good photos.
Thank you. I appreciate it and everything. So that's really has affected me. And I still wonder to this day, like, if I would have took that photography class my freshman year, if I would have changed.
Yeah, would things have been different?
Yeah. Would I have changed my degree? Would I have kind of focused more on photography rather than business?
Yeah. But it seems like to me, like with the job you do now, like, I mean, you obviously still do a lot of photography.
Yeah. Yeah. And it used to be, and even with my previous job, all that stuff used to be outsourced.
Mm-hmm.
But now, because I work in marketing now, I'm a marketing director, and it used to be that the marketing director would do kind of control and manage the office and all of the marketing assets, graphic design, all the printing and photography was kind of outsourced out. But because of my skill set that I was able to bring, I brought all of that back in, and it saved a lot of money over the last few years because we were not paying for those because we had the resources on hand.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's super useful.
Yeah,
see, so you're using it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I do freelance photography all the time, so I get paid all the time to like take pictures and everything. So some of the negative aspects. So my parents' divorce happened. Mm-hmm. That had a huge impact on all of us.
I feel like every kid with divorced parents is
yes.
Like, oh yeah, this messed mm-hmm. up stuff.
Yeah, but the worst part though was like, because we had to go live with our grandparents. Well,
yeah.
So I remember like, it was like the first or second day that I would live with my grandparents, right? So they lived in a small two-bedroom house.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually converted the attic into my bedroom. They finished it. My father like had carpenter skills. So it wasn't like I was like Harry Potter
in the attic.
No. This was a
furbished, to your room, Harry.
Right. This was a furbished, really nice place. But because of that, though, because there was a lot of stress on my grandparents because they had 5 kids of their own. And they were, you know, in their 50s and now having to take in 3 kids that were 8, 6, and 4 was a huge stress on them. So I remember my grandmother telling me, one of the first things she ever said is that, Ed, you're going to grow up to be a drunken loser like your father.
Oh, ouch.
To an 8-year-old.
Good God.
So that had a huge impact on my life on, like, never following that path.
Yeah.
And everything.
Like, did that almost, like, inspire you to be like, no, like, I am going to exceed your expectations?
Yes. Yeah. Like, at least I try. And I mean, that's still a huge impact. I mean, like, I don't like to go around and say it, but, like what people think of me, like, really has a huge impact on me.
Well, yeah.
And everything.
I mean, everyone has that.
Right. Well, yeah. Maybe, right, yeah. So it's one of those things that, like, I do at times wear my heart on my sleeve.
Yeah.
And everything is because of stuff, like, you know, emotional scarring from when I was 8 years old.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, that's so heavy.
Yeah.
That sucks that, like I see this with some families I know, too, where, like, the grandparents are raising the kids because, mm-hmm. like, the grandparents want to be grandparents.
Yeah.
But, like, when they're put in that parental role, like, they can't be, mm-hmm. you know?
Oh, definitely. And now, like, now that I've seen my, like, my sister, because she now has a teenager boy,
mm-hmm.
And everything, and seeing like her experience of the last, you know, 12 years of raising this boy, and I can just imagine now, like, you know, him turning around and having another kid, and then my sister having to go through the whole raising process again,
yeah.
and then the toll that it takes. So now that I've seen that like that experience with my sister. I kind of give a little more lenience to my grandmother.
Yeah.
But at the same time, though, like it had a huge impact on my early life.
Yeah.
Now, the other major negative aspect was like in elementary and middle school.
Uh-huh.
So my last name is De La Paz, which mm-hmm. is Spanish. It means of the peace.
Mm-hmm.
So kids can be mean. Kids can be cruel. And because of our last name, we got picked on a lot.
Yeah.
Which means I ended up in a lot of fights defending my sisters and
yeah.
myself. So, yeah, everyone thinks that like I'm nice and kind, but I do know how to fight just because I had to when I was young. It was really funny, too, because I was also in the Army Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
I did that because it was something that we did growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, from the time I was 18 to 24... I was in the Army Reserve. Well, I was actually a bodyguard. So I was in a chaplain assistant,
mm-hmm.
which means that it was my job to protect the chaplain who was a non-combatant.
Okay.
So I got training in actually self-defense and everything. And so they'd always put me up against these, when we had to like fight and mm-hmm. wrestle and stuff like that, they always put me up against these 6-foot big beefcake guys, and I'd have to take them down all the time, and they were always shocked.
Wow.
Yeah, and everything. So that, I always think it's funny when people always throw that out there. Oh, well, you're probably this nice, upstanding citizen when you're a kid. And I go, I kind of have a little scrapper background.
Yeah, because you wouldn't know that, like, just meeting you.
Yeah.
You would not have that
vibe yeah.
at all, that scrappy vibe. Well, at least you know how to fight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, can you tell me about one of the people who has been the kindest to you in your life?
Oh, so there's several of them. Like when I went to IUE's, like I said, it was a huge paradigm shift in my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my business pretty much crashed. I was pretty much starting over, and I decided to finally go back and get my degree.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because at the time, because even though I had a couple years experience running my own business, doing all these different things, when I applied for jobs that I knew I could do, the number one reason why I would get turned down or they would hire someone else was because they had a bachelor's degree and I didn't.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit of frustration. So I kind of went back to school at first out of resentment.
Yeah.
That this is something I needed to do in order to, quote unquote, prove myself, even though I had real life experience.
Yeah.
So when I was there, I really met some people that really, like, took me under their wing. Deanna Cooper, Angie Cooksey, Frances Yates, Patty Crawford. These were like role models and kind of really helped me through my transition of, you know, starting over in mm-hmm. life pretty much. Because, you know, I lost all my income sources and I had to go back to working part-time and trying to go to school.
Yeah.
So I went from being having a nice lifestyle
to
scraping by and everything. So I'm very grateful for those people who really helped me through my college years to get me back to where I needed to be.
That was, like, what do you think inspired them to, or not inspired them, but why do you think they helped you?
They have kind hearts. It's just
yeah.
what they do. I mean, like, because most of them were like administration of IUE's, so they weren't like professors. Now Angie Cooksey was, but I also worked with her running the neighborhood health center.
Mm-hmm.
So like because she saw my skill set, because also I also had experience working in childcare and everything like that. I was able to make that transition over to be able to use my business skills in my childcare skills in order to run a health center.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I was able to build these relationships because right after that, I became an AmeriCorps where I was helping. I was an AmeriCorps for IU East. And what I was doing is I was working with people who were going to get their teaching degree but never had experience working in the classroom and preparing them to make that transition.
Mm-hmm.
So we partnered with the Boys and Girls Club and all these other different organizations throughout Wayne County in order to give these soon-to-be teachers experience with actually working with kids.
Okay.
And that's where I met Patty Crawford and then Francis Yates and everything like that. And then I actually stayed on working at at IU East in WCTV, and that's where I made the connection with Deanna Beeman, as just kind of being just the person that I can talk to and everything. So, yeah.
Okay. What do you feel most grateful for in your life?
Oh, I had to think about this for a long time, and I have to say Pop-Tarts.
Yeah?
But no, seriously.
Oh, no, Pop-Tarts is a fine answer.
It is, yeah. I mean, they got me through my college years.
Yeah.
Both times, yeah. But I have to be grateful for wisdom. I feel that I was lucky to not make the same mistakes that a lot of my family members did.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, like I said, my family can be juveniles. You know, I'm the only person in my family who doesn't smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
I've never been to prison.
Mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. So I think I've made a lot of life choices, and I think a lot of that came from being grateful that I developed the wisdom that I did.
How do you think you developed that wisdom?
Well, I think a lot of it had to go back to comic books and, just the wanting to rebel against what my grandmother said.
Yeah.
And everything. So I think that's really being able to use like Spider-Man, Captain America, and the X-Men as my role models. Because, that was a huge thing, you know, especially with Captain America and Spider-Man. Great power comes great responsibility. And be able to kind of take that heart and kind of model my life behind.
Yeah.
Like stuff like Peter Parker and everything, I think really helped.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. What are some of the most important lessons you've learned in life, and how did you learn them?
The first one I'm going to go off has been one of the most recent ones. About a year ago, Will Smith started to become really active in sharing life stories,
okay.
Right? And he started doing these small videos on social media about stuff that he's learned in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And the quote that he gave was, "It's not your job to make everyone else happy."
Ugh.
And he was talking about this because him and his wife were having issues, and he came to a realization that I can't make you happy. You have to make yourself happy.
Yeah.
And that's really had a lot of impact on me, because that's one of my major problems. Like I said, I care a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And because I care a lot, I try to solve other people's problem and go out of my way to do whatever I can to help other people. And I had to try to step back from that.
Mm-hmm.
Because for my own self,
yeah.
You know, because I can't, if I'm not taking care of myself, then I can't take care of other people, and I shouldn't. It's not my job to save the world, in theory, unless I do become Captain America.
Unless you get bit by a radioactive spider, in which case it is.
Right, yeah. So definitely Will Smith has been a huge impact in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Not just from when I was a kid, though, because, Will Smith has always been one of my idols growing up, but now the fact that he's sharing all his wisdom and everything has really, really impacted me greatly. So another one of my life lessons was embrace being an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
So growing up, both my stepbrothers are huge extroverts. And when I was starting my first business, all the other business people that I was around were huge extroverts too.
Mm-hmm.
So and then that was the go-go, you know, you got to make $1 million today type of lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
And being the introvert, it caused a lot of mental problems for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was trying to be something that I wasn't. I was trying to make sales, trying to call people. And I still have a little bit of trauma from having to do cold calls.
Cold calls are the worst.
Yeah, yeah. So because of that, though, I've kind of understood that because I'm an introvert, I have another skill set that they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I've started to realize that I can rely on that, and I can actually do things differently and better for myself than to do it their way.
Okay.
And a part of that has to do, what I've done is I've made connections with extroverts.
Mm-hmm.
So I surround myself with extroverts rather than trying to be an extrovert.
Like a human shield.
Yeah, the greatest people I have is Ashley C.
Mm-hmm.
and Laura Lee Hines, because that is their life. So if I have something where I need that type of person, I can rely on Ashley for that. And then on the same hand, whenever she needs to that control, the long thinking process, the, hey, what do you think about this idea type of stuff, I'm there to kind of be more stable for my extroverted friends.
Yeah.
So it's kind of became like a tortoise and a hare type of relationship.
Yeah. Well, that's so important to realize that, like, you don't, I mean, to realize the gifts that you bring to the table, you know? Oh. And especially, I mean, the world is made for extroverts.
It is.
So that's got to be really hard. And that's cool that you've come to that place.
Mm-hmm. And then my final life lesson that I want to talk about is actually a quote that I found that I use on a lot of my mobile devices as the background. And it is, the best way to predict the future is to create it.
Whoa.
I mean, I've never been a big fan of the 9-to-5, you know, ever since I read the Miyamoto book. So when I dropped out of college and I was 19, started my own first business, I made a lot of mistakes. But because of that, I end up, like, realizing that there is no straight path. Like, there's no, you have to do this, this is that. And the people that I know that have done that, what's happened? They usually end up with this huge midlife crisis. And rather than, like, just going with the flow, figuring out where I need to do now, I kind of shift that. So I don't, like, I need to do this, this, and that. I'm going to think about, what do I need to do now in order to get to the next step? And when I get to the next step, I'm going to reevaluate and seeing, well, does the path I was planning to go, does that make sense now?
Yeah.
If not, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And rather than thinking about as this is my end goals, is that these are just steps.
This is my next step.
Yeah, this is my next step. And to realize that the step process will never end.
Yeah.
But, like, it'll go. And like, if as soon as I reach that end step, then I'm going to figure out, okay, I've reached every single goal I want in my life. What now?
Yeah.
And then you set up more goals. And I think that's what really keeps people motivated in life. And I think a lot of times when people, like, lose their self and lose their willing to live is because they think they've got, like, you know, that they've got to their happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, though, that's probably just the starting point to where they need to be or where they should go.
Yeah. No, I think it's so important because as you go through that path, mm-hmm. What you want's going to change, you know? So, like, reevaluating, like, after every step.
That's, definitely.
Yeah. Super cool. Very good way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what are you proudest of and why does it make you feel proud?
So, the first one is completing my bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it did open up a lot of doors for me. But for me, though, it, like, at the time, it was because then I can go back to all the naysayers that didn't hire me. Because I still kept a lot of their, I'm sorry, I'm not going to accept you for this job thing. So I have a stack of these.
Of rejection letters?
Of rejection letters.
Oh, my God.
And I know at times I've thought about, well, because the thing is, I still work with some of these people that rejected
that rejected you.
And, like, sometimes I'm just sitting in a meeting with them and be like, and, you know, imagine what I could have done for, like, I've always wanted to say this, and I say this in my head. What could I have done for your business, but because you turned me down because of this, where are you at now?
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Even though I wouldn't do that because, like I said, I am very caring.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those passing.
It's a thought in the back of your head.
In your head.
Yeah. That,
but, yeah, so I'm really proud of it. And everything. I do have to say that one of my most recent proudest moments was I was named one of the top 10 young professionals in Wayne County this year.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah. So that was, it's weird because, like, I don't like it when people, like, give me praise,
mm-hmm.
but it does make me feel good.
Okay.
But it makes me feel really awkward too. Like because I always feel that there's always someone more, awarding and more deserved of my award, if that's a word.
Yeah.
So I always felt like, well, okay, so I'm being awarded for this, but I know that this person has actually done so much more, and actually, and then I think this also goes back to my wanting to always improve and always being better.
Mm-hmm.
So while I did get an award for this year, I also think about, well, what could I have done better?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what can I do things, you know, that would have had more of an impact and everything.
How do you balance, like, that need you have to constantly improve yourself with, like, all, but at the same time be able to be satisfied with where you are.
See, I'm not. That's the problem, I think.
So you don't.
Yeah, like I said, I really have a hard time. Because I hear it all the time that, like, people say, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm not, like, I got that next step to go to.
Yeah.
But then again, though, like, if I'm setting up this step mentality that, like, I'm always visioning the next step. So mm-hmm. no matter where I'm at, I'm never going to be, quote unquote, proud because I'm still aiming for the next one. So yeah. that is one of the side effects of that mentality is that I do constantly worry about, you know, at what point do I feel proud about myself?
Mm-hmm.
And if I do, then am I going to start slacking? That's my major concern is that I become content and I become like lazy in what I'm doing
mm-hmm.
because I know because I feel like I've hit my plateau or I've hit my mountaintop and I don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's one of those. So yeah, I mean like I'm also very duality.
Yeah.
So I always see the positive and the negative. And that sometimes will always lead me to take forever to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very indecisive.
Oh, me too.
It's horrible. I'm horrible at making decisions.
Do you ever feel too, like, personally, like, when I make a decision, like, no matter what decision I make, I'll always feel like it was the wrong decision, like, after I've done it? Or do you feel comfortable with your decision?
It depends. Like if I feel... Okay. If it turns out for the good, I'm happy with the decision.
Well, obviously, yeah.
Right, but like if it goes bad or does not like reach the pinnacle that I thought it could, then I start second guessing myself
yeah.
a lot. And that really, yeah, that's a lot of my process of how do I do better?
How do I be better? Okay, I think we might make it through all of them. Mm-hmm. Okay, how would you like to be remembered?
So this question, like, I thought about for a long time, too. And, like, when I was young, I wanted to be remembered as a famous cartoonist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone like Jim Davis.
Charles Schulz,
yes. But as I've gotten older, I've become really unsure. You know, I often think about, like, if I had the power to change the world, should I? And why have I not tried to do so?
Ooh.
I know. Like,
I mean, I think you are changing the world, like, with little things.
Yeah, but, like, I think, though, too, like, if I would have put in the effort, is there any world problems that I can solve? Like, especially when we hear that climate change is going to kill us in, like, 15 years. Like, what can I do? Can I solve this problem?
Stop using your dang straws, Ed.
I've stopped using straws.
He brought a reusable water bottle.
No, but like, and that goes for any problem that happens, like yeah. in the world. Like if I see something, and that's the creativity side of me, the problem solving is that if I see any problem, my mind starts going 1,000 miles an hour trying to figure out how can I solve this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's caused us a lot of stress in my life too. Going back to the whole trying to save everyone
mm-hmm.
is that like I also try to solve everyone's problems,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's where a lot of my stress comes from is because. I don't know if I can or if I should.
Yeah.
And if I should, why am I not doing that?
Wow.
I don't know. Like.
That's a really heavy burden to place on yourself.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so we probably have time for one more question. Do you want to pick which one?
Well, yeah, let's go to the last one.
The last one. Okay, the last one was...
The influential person.
Oh, yeah. Who was the most influential person in your life and what did they teach you?
I actually want to talk about a person that has had a lot of impact in my life in a major way over the last couple of years. Her name is Caitlin Blansett.
Oh, stop.
So she's given me the courage to try new things in my life. From karaoke to dancing to trying improv in front of a live audience.
Which you did very well at.
Mm-hmm. Doing stand up. I mean, it was always something I always wanted to do but never really had the opportunity. And she gave me the courage and the encouragement to actually do this and do some of the things that in my life that I've always wanted to do and could never do. So she is one of the most amazing people I've ever met, and she's really funny.
Well, thank you. What I like have admired about you, especially in this past year, was like your try a new thing a month or yeah. try something that scares you. Like
try something new.
Yeah, like I thought that was such like a cool way to challenge yourself, and it was also like I mean one thing a month is a lot.
It is.
And like I don't know if I could do one thing that scares me.
You have to try it. And it doesn't have to be scary. It just has to be something new, something that you've always wanted to do that you never got around to doing it.
But But I kind of internalized that a little. I shouldn't be talking. I internalized that a little bit, like, in small ways. Like, sometimes I'm like, do something new today. So, like, walk home a different way. Mm-hmm. You know? Just, like, those tiny things. Yeah. But thank you. That was very sweet. Yeah. This has been a fun conversation. And, yeah, do you have any last words in the last 10 seconds?
Thank you for having me on. It's been interesting.
Yeah. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
Oh. That was so nice. Yeah. Wow, you prepared really well in an hour.